Welcome back to Redefining AI, the show that uncovers the nuances of artificial intelligence, exploring its impact and evolution across industries. Now, today we dive deep into the realm of marketing in the AI era, particularly transforming business strategies for humanizing and personalization of customer connections. Now, I'm your host, Lauren Hocker-Zaffer, and today I've been joined by Bob Hutchins. Now, Bob wears many hats. He is a marketing problem solver, a fractional CMO, a digital strategist, a TEDx speaker, an executive growth hacker, a PhD researcher, and a behavioral and organizational psychologist. Now, this is impressive. I don't wear as many hats myself. So welcome, Bob. Any hat that you prefer wearing?
Oh, thank you, Lauren. I have many interests, as you've communicated, but hopefully in this conversation, I'll show and communicate how I pull them all together. And actually, they're part of the same thread. So I'm looking forward to diving into that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when we start there, when you're talking about they're part of the same thread. Can you expand a little bit? Does one Sure. intertwine or complement, or is there a juxtaposition?
Yeah.
Maybe tell us a little
well,
bit.
I will probably start at the beginning, going back about 20 years, a couple of decades back. I've always had an interest in my career is in technology, computers. I started a digital agency in the early 2000s doing marketing. I've always loved communication, marketing. Prior to that, I was in digital outsourcing and consulting from a sales perspective and a marketing. I'm not a programmer or a developer, but during the late 90s, during the Y2K conversions of old legacy systems, I was fortunate enough to work in sales and marketing of consultants and digital outsourcing of tech consultants. And during that time, I learned a lot, saw the advent of the internet coming and how it was going to transform what was going on in the terms of business and communication. And so I started a digital agency here in Nashville in the early 2000s that was focusing on primarily entertainment media and companies and organizations that had fan bases and customers that were very engaged. And I saw an opportunity, what then, this was pre-social media, mm-hmm. to be able to use email marketing specifically. And then it kind of expanded from there. And I ran that agency for 17 years. And here's where we start to talk about that common thread of all these different hats that I wear. What I learned early on, Lauren, was that all marketing people and marketers, specifically if you work in a service business or an agency business, mm-hmm. you really practice psychology day in and day out. Clients come to you and they want to pay you to do something that they haven't been able to do. And what they haven't been able to do and they're willing to pay you money for is to change the behavior of their customers. And so it's all about human behavior. They don't purchase as much as I want them to. They don't buy. They don't act a certain way. They don't engage. I can't reach the right people to do a certain thing on behalf of my product or service or movie or music, whatever it may be. Marketers are about human behavior. And so I saw that and I began to research that, study it, and realize that common thread of when you understand human psychology and behavior, you really understand marketing. And so I began to apply that, went back later in my life and got a degree in behavioral and organizational psychology, began to pull that thread a little bit more. And the organizational psychology piece says, if you're going to be a really strong brand, you have to be a brand all throughout your company. That includes your internal teams have to reflect those values. And so when I talk to my clients now, I closed my agency back in 2017, continue to consult and work with companies of all sizes, from startups all the way to Fortune 100 companies, advising them on their marketing strategies and solving marketing problems, always from a human behavior and psychology perspective.
And what is interesting in what you've just laid out there is now we've brought generative AI into the equation, because I would not disagree at all with you in the fact that psychology is a core component of marketing and how you are approaching a market. I mean, the consideration of how humans are behaving and how you can affect that behavior, especially when you're looking at influencing their decisions around maybe purchasing an object or interacting with your organization. So now we've got AI that's stepped into the stage, it's stepped on the stage, it's there, generative AI in particular. And we had a lot of sort of, I think when it first came and it emerged into the ecosystem, there was a lot of headlines and narratives around, oh, it can be used excellently in marketing. It's a very good tool for marketing. How, in reflection upon what you have seen up until now, I mean, we're sort of a year on when it first hit the stage, how has it been used in marketing, generative AI in particular? And then looking at the core focus of our conversation, especially in humanizing and personalizing customer connections.
Yeah, it's a kind of counterintuitive discussion. And depending on where you stand on that, and I know listening to your program in the past, Lauren, you've had kind of many different perspectives. And in general, it's a pro AI podcast, right? But there are lots of voices out there, as I'm sure you've encountered, that say this is a dehumanizing, this is a creativity robbing, yeah. This is mm-hmm. On and on it goes. And while there are some legitimate concerns, as I'm sure you would agree, there's also the ability, as I've said, to personalize and to understand and actually to humanize this idea of communication and specifically marketing in the context of this conversation even more. Because what AI allows you to do is to help to make sense of this vast amounts of information and data that we now have on almost every human being, like it or not. Every time you go online from the first time, whether it was 20 years ago or more, you left a digital breadcrumb that is still there. And what AI allows you to do within ethical privacy boundaries, and we still have a lot of work to do, it allows us to personalize and humanize that marketing experience even more, not necessarily take away from it. And we can talk about those nuances a little bit, but specifically, what excites me from a marketing perspective is that AI now allows us to truly go from even another step from a mass media era to a very, very personalized human where you're reflecting in a mirror back the person that you're talking to so that they can see themselves using that product or service, which that's the goal of all marketing. And AI takes us several steps closer to that.
Very valid point. And I think that what would be important to explore there is what avenues is it then allowing of exploration when we're talking about the personalization? Because, I mean, you have quite rightly highlighted that, you know, there is that sort of skeptical and quite rightly sort of division between people that think it will dampen creative elements. But then you've got people that are quite excited about the fact that it can really help them strike this balance of efficiency, automation, and as you've mentioned, personalization. What exactly do you see as being strengthened in the personalization element? Are we talking about, you know, using more data-driven AI automated processes in marketing to allow this personalization? Or are we talking about generative capabilities from a position of creativity? What are we talking about there?
Well, several things. So let's start with the data, because I think that's foundational. A good friend of mine, Dr. Ken Elliott, who is the founder of Provision Analytics, he has this saying, and I think he just released a paper about our organizations and our enterprise organizations, whatever organization you're part of, company, et cetera, data-driven too much, or are you data-driven enough? Mm-hmm. And he makes the distinction between data-driven and data-dependent. And I think what AI is going to really expose is those companies who are not prioritizing their data and we're going to move from an era of data-driven companies to data-dependent companies. AI's ability to analyze vast data sets really enables marketers to understand customer preferences, behaviors, trends in real time. And so that level of a deep insight allows for highly, highly, highly personalized marketing strategies that resonate. So imagine a huge email list of 150,000 people or a million people, however big your email list may be. Each one of them now that we have the capability, and it's only going to get more expansive and available, that every single one of those million people can get a unique email about your product that is highlighting what they have purchased, how they've purchased, when they've purchased, what their likes, colors, you know, psychographic data. And we've seen this with Amazon slowly getting that way for the past 10 years. Your Amazon experience when you log on is very different than mine. And every single person's is different because they know what we've purchased and how what the frequency of our purchases are and what the rhythms and seasons of our purchases. And that's, we've kind of come to expect that from Amazon, but there's technology now in the context of AI that the average startup has the ability to that, which cost Amazon billions of dollars over the past decade or two to develop that. And that's where I get excited, is not that we can necessarily use it as an exploitive tool, but from my perspective, we can actually humanize and be less exploitive with our marketing. And I think consumers are going to come to expect that, is we understand them personally. Those organizations and companies that don't use data and personalization are going to be probably not paid attention to as much.
There's so many points to unpack there. And it's also fascinating from my perspective of hearing the potential that lies around using data. And obviously, you mentioned there, your last point was, you know, the companies that are not using their data, then they can put themselves possibly in a position where they're falling behind others and not offering that experience that will become expected. But then you also mentioned as well that it shouldn't be an exploitative tool. And I heard in my head when you were talking as well that obviously there are still these considerations in the context of marketing, especially of, you know, customer privacy, customer consent. So how does an organization, especially one that's not used AI before in a marketing setting, A, start to understand where they can start working with their data and also not to cross that line of being exploitive and ensuring that there's those concerns that are in place?
Yeah, that's it's a big conversation. And I wish, I'm not going to lie to you and say I have it all figured out. None of us do. However, I would say there's some basics that I think will take us a long way. And it's simple. It's transparency. Companies need to be extremely transparent and say, this is how we collect your data. This is where. This is what we're going to use it for. And this is how we're going to use it. So there's transparency. Secondly, consent. There has to be consent that people say, we would like to. Do you approve? Yes, you approve. A very clear process. This transparency and this consent process that has to be in place has to be there for the sake of trust, and it has to be there for the sake of your customers understanding very clearly what you're doing with their data and how you're using it. So that's the foundation, because listeners can listen to this and go, well, of course, that's basics. You'd be surprised at how many companies don't have that privacy and consent policy locked down. So you're going to see more of that moving forward. So building trust, building awareness, customers understanding how you're using that data. Secondly, when it comes to exploitation, I think we have to, as marketers, as executives, as leaders, what you're doing, we have to continue to push and be a voice. And that's part of my work and my passion and understanding human behavior, is this idea of restorative marketing, meaning, am I going to leave someone better than I found them in when I communicate? And is that my main goal? This hard versus soft style of marketing. Companies like Patagonia and that are very profitable, but also very transparent and upfront about what they care about, what their values are, what the quality of the products, where they're being made. We're going to see more and more of that. And so from a perspective of integrating AI into marketing, there's got to be values and perspectives of companies going into this that say, we're done playing off the fear of missing out, the FOMO. Mm. We're done with those strategies of false, exploitive, playing on people's anxiety and fears in marketing. We're done doing that. We're going to focus on what enhances their humanity. What is the personalization? What does this individual human really care about? What do they value? What are their likes? What are their dislikes? And if they have opted in and given me consent to have a relationship with them, then I'm going to respect that relationship and I'm going to use AI to analyze the vast data sets of that person so that they can have the kindest, most engaging, most human marketing experience. That's the dream that I have, and I think that's what AI can give us.
Mm, admirable dream. And I mean, I do sort of mirror the emphasis that you've placed on the words consent and relationship, because it is a relationship. I mean, it's the whole aim that you have to have a relationship with a customer as well. Another topic that's quite interesting in the sense of how it's developed in the market world and from the angle of marketeers and the tools that are available to marketeers is people are also using tools like Midjourney, DALL-E to generate content for marketing purposes. And what I've started to see is that it's become somewhat identifiable that an image has been generated by AI.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the question, you know, and many people ask it themselves, how can marketeers maintain authenticity and creativity, especially when they're incorporating AI-generated content into maybe their strategy or storytelling? What's your opinion on that?
You know, how we define creativity is a big discussion. I would say this, that we had similar discussions when the photographs and cameras first came about in the late 19th century or mid 19th centuries. We had this conversation when Photoshop came on, right? We've had these conversations around stock photos.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that unless you have a DSLR, just talking about photos or images, a DSLR camera that you go out and take pictures for your content regularly, or you have a studio in your house where you're doing paintings with oil paints yourself, I would say, is using DALL-E really any different than using Photoshop to make something or using stock photos that you go and purchase? We're really talking about a creation of an image that we didn't create, but we want to illustrate. And I would say that artificial intelligence, far from stifling creativity, it can actually enhance it by taking over the data-driven, repetitive task of, and really freeing marketers to focus on creating more innovative strategies and content that resonate on that human level we're talking about. So, you know, it speeds up the process of learning and spending time on Photoshop can be time intensive.
Yeah.
Finding the perfect stock image can be, I don't like the way that person looks. That's not the right setting. That's not diverse enough. Why waste all that time when you can say, hey, this is what I need. This is what I want it to look like. Give it to me. And then the illustration for the purposes of what we're talking about in marketing, I believe, is just as creative, if not more creative. Yes, we're in the early stages and we can recognize when DALL-E, but I would argue if you go to places like Midjourney and even what Meta has now with their Imagine tool, there's some pretty close to photorealistic images that's really hard to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And those are only going to get better in the next several months and years. So I don't really see it from a marketing perspective. Yes, I love real painting. And yes, I love real staged photographs and photo shoots. I don't have the time for that. And most marketers don't if they want to scale.
Yeah, and I think that that's the point as well. I mean, the opportunity for the tech itself to develop is huge. I mean, it's developing already at an incomparable speed. And I think that it's the capabilities of the technology that then is going to underline the ability for sustainability from a more sort of diverse angle. But it's definitely a consideration about enhancing and speeding up the output, depending on the directive that you're given it or how you're prompting it. There's also a component of that when we're talking about maybe two sides of the coin, especially in teams that are starting to use AI tools. There's some that are like, well, we don't want to adopt it. We do want to adopt it. How can an organization then, especially in a marketing division, how can they encourage and ensure that there's the openness around adopting this data-driven approach for more personalization, humanization into their organization and foster a culture of AI?
Yeah, that's another big question, certainly, that we don't have time to cover in detail. But I think I would fly over and give you some bullet points saying...
We only ask big questions on this show, Bob.
It forces me to be succinct. That's sometimes difficult for me. I think that in organizations, this is another thing I do in my consulting practice, having a background in organizational psychology, I do believe that unless, like I mentioned earlier, unless that your values, what you say, what you preach, what you say you stand for, unless that is permeating every area of your company, it will not ring true to the consumer, to your customer. And I kind of have put on this other hat called a brand therapist that I work with companies to do this. And one of those areas, what you're talking about, is when it comes to teams and cultures, if you're going to adopt the usage of AI, the first thing you're going to have to address is the elephant in the room, which is, am I going to be obsolete? And is this going to take away my job? Rather than saying that, I would, again, point to the advent of Photoshop, which said, is this going to make creatives and creative directors obsolete? And the answer was absolutely not. It sped up their job. It created a better output many ways. And I think the old saying that many people have said, and it's popular right now, it's not AI that's going to replace people. It's people using AI that's going to replace people that aren't using AI. And so I think having those conversations inside of organizations, where you need to be looking is not in the workers and team members. You need to be thinking about higher up. You know, we're all surprised in organizations, and what we're finding is that we thought that AI would make the more blue collar and low to mid-level jobs obsolete. But what we're finding, it's the white collar and higher level jobs, i.e. looking at finances and CFOs and the ways that we manage people and CEOs and CMOs and all of these, the day-to-day analyzation jobs, the management, the crunching of numbers, the financial decisions, the legal decisions, the analyzing lots of data in the context of connecting dots and making decisions. Those are all things that AI does really, really well. The way that and so what does that leave those higher level jobs? They have to develop better emotional intelligence. Again, you have to guide those AIs with the things that are very, very, very human, which is the things that are more in that soft skill category. But the way that I always tell companies and organizations is imagine having a very sophisticated intern or assistant that's really, really smart and efficient. That's what AI is to you. It allows you to do things faster, to the repetitive tasks, the things that you can spend a lot of time on that doesn't really amplify what you're really, really good at. And now, having said that, you wouldn't take a sophisticated intern or a really smart assistant, efficient assistant, and not read over their work and let them write the executive reports and give it to your board members without looking at it. Of course, you wouldn't do that. In the same way, AI, it needs human assistance. We're entering an age where we're not going to be using technology and tools that can't operate without us and that we control. We're entering an age where we're going to be working side by side along with and as partners with machines, but still they can't operate without us in a way that we need them to do in a truly human-centric way.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very good argument to motion as well. I really think that it is the age of augmentation. It's not the age of complete automation and right. extinction. It is very much an age of augmentation. And with augmentation does come empowerment. It opens an avenue of exploration into opportunity, into growth. I think that the most important thing is that there is that mindset and openness to validate to what extent that can actually happen as well.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that jobs won't be lost, Lauren.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it depends on the actual
that is going to happen. Yeah. It always happens with new technology. But these people, many, many, many times, more than not, are retrained, reinvent, and are reabsorbed in other ways. And so the person that was, spending 8 hours a day writing ad copy or marketing copy on behalf of someone else's product may not like the fact that it's going to be harder for them. But I think many of them will wake up and go, oh, working 8 hours a day writing marketing copy on behalf of someone else isn't necessarily the best use of who I am or what I really am passionate about as a human. Maybe this will give me the freedom to be more efficient at that, still make my income, but have more time to work on that novel or that art or that play that I've been longing to write and dreaming about, but never thought it was possible because I was working 40, 50 hours a week writing ad copy on behalf of someone else. I know that's very idealistic, but I think that's the thing that AI is going to give us, because we've learned this in past history with new technologies and things that have happened.
Exactly. And I think that's a good note to end the conversation on. I think it's a idealistic, but also very positive note yes. to end our discussion. And I want to thank you. It's been wonderful having the opportunity to talk with you. And I'm sure that everyone listening has enjoyed what you've shared with us today, Bob. So thank you very much for joining us on Redefining AI today.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank everyone else who's listened today. And as usual, if you've enjoyed this episode, then share it. Share it with a friend, share it with your mom, share it with your dad, share it with whoever. Thank you.